Hello and welcome to the weekly round of Monkey Shines that is the Guardian Film Show. Feel free to join us as we swing from movie to movie, variously hooting our delight and beating our chests in hysterical fury. Just please, no tapping on the glass. It makes us confused and irritable. Coming up on this week's show, the temperatures rising at the nuclear power plant in Grand Central. Mike Myers pays tribute to the ultimate Hollywood insider with Supermensch. And it walks and it talks. It's Pudsey the movie. It's clearly the week for talking animals. First up, we meet Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the sequel to the reboot of the antique simian franchise, in which the world ends not with a bang, not with a whimper, but with a ooh-ooh-ha-ha. And it looks like this.
Apes! Do not want war!
Humans beware. The monkey planet is now 10 years old, and the people are holed up in the ruins of San Francisco. Can the ape and the human live together in peace? Or must they go to war?
We both have families. You want to protect yours. I want to protect mine. It's our only chance for peace.
Are you aware?
No!
They are going to turn on you.
They're animals!
Caesar, it's your home.
Who was that?
A good man like you.
Caesar, love humans more than apes.
Joining me in the monkey house, it's Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Short. Peter, we had a really bad summer blockbuster last week with the Transformers.
Yeah.
Is this the corrective?
Yes, I think it is. I think this is the summer blockbuster of the year, actually. I think it's absolutely terrifically good. I've been really pleasantly surprised by this, I suppose, prequel franchise is the only way to describe it. I thought the last one, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, in what sense Dawn comes after Rise, I'm not exactly sure, but I thought that was very good. And I think this is good too. I think it's fair to say I don't think any prequel will approximate the sheer shock value of the very first film, the idea of arriving and finding the monkeys in charge.
No.
But this, I think, does a really good job. And the CGI work is kind of next level, really. The monkeys themselves, the apes themselves, with their very interestingly and stylishly designed mannerisms, quasi-human sort of simian mannerisms of screeching and swaying and shuddering and yelling. It's really good. It really is good. And I think the anti-circus character, Caesar, is interesting, really has a distinctive presence. And his duplicitous lieutenant, Koba, played by Toby Kebbell, is good as well. Rather like Scar in The Lion King, to be quite honest with you. But good, really good. So I thought this was good stuff. Mm. I really did.
The apes are kind of more interesting than the humans, if anything, I found.
Yeah, the humans really let this down for me. I mean, Jason Clarke is lovely, and Kerry Russell is lovely, and that's it. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, Gary Oldman's a bit more interesting than that, but there's sort of.
He seemed to be thinking that he was in a worse movie than actually he was in. He was kind of dragging it all down a bit. It was a bit B movie histrionics.
But I like that because the rest of them were like B movie survivors from some dreadful trapped in a volcano kind of movie, which I really didn't think was very good. And I thought that there was something strange going on with the circus thing because it's so much about his performance, it's so much about the performance capture and all that, which is extraordinary. But I felt we had too much of Caesar looking thoughtful, Caesar looking worried, Caesar wondering. And that was quite sort of same-paced, all that stuff. The whole film was quite same-paced. It didn't really quicken and then slow. It didn't really have a lot of nuance to it beyond the extraordinary nuance of the CGI and what you're meant to be thinking all the time about how Andy Serkis is amazingly great in it. For me, that kind of let it down a bit. And also, I still can't quite get over the thing that there's something freak showish about the allure of this. There's something still a bit kind of, oh my God, they look so real, they're just like us.
Is that the audience's fault? We haven't quite acclimatised.
I think the film is only playing on that. That's its main tune, regardless of what else is going on. It's still about, oh my God, they're really quite like us. That's it.
I quite like the plot.
I thought it was all right.
It's the best kind of sci-fi in that it's in tune with certain historical things. It's sort of settlers, Native Americans. You can see that kind of parable there a bit.
And the idea that in its own humble way, it was taking seriously the idea of, do we extend a peace process to them, or do we just not trust them and wipe them out before they wipe us out? And in its own way, it does take this idea seriously. And it's quite interesting that war and violence is being questioned and challenged in, and I hasten to add, in this filmic sense, in this slightly kind of multiplexy way, of course. But I didn't think it was bad. I disagree with Catherine in a way. I didn't find it boring or samey. It kept my attention. It kept my attention as a spectacle, particularly the hunter-gatherer scene at the beginning. I thought was terrifically good. Mm. And the bizarreness of these creatures that look a bit like us, that kind of uncanny valley thing that's starting to happen. Again, I thought that was deliberate and it works well. Mm. So I really like it.
Don't you move!
Should we shoot him?
Maybe.
All right.
Oh, you want a drink?
All right.
Easy.
All right.
The rather good Dawn of the Planet of the Apes there. Moving along the evolutionary chain, we now come to Grand Central, where the human protagonists all have a certain glow about them. It might be love, it may be something else altogether.
C'est un combat contre la dose, incolore, inodore, invisible, elle est partout autour de toi. Tu respires mal, ton cœur s'emballe à 100 à l'heure.
Tahar Rahim and Leah Sidhu are the hard hat employees at a power station in rural France, darting off for illicit trysts amid the bulrushes nearby. Radiation sickness, they tell themselves, is a little like being kissed by a beautiful stranger. A little giddiness followed by a looming fear of the emotional fallout.
Ça arrive souvent, ça?
Ça arrive? Pas souvent.
Ça veut dire quoi, pas souvent?
Ça te ferait chier, hein? Ça te ferait chier que j'ai des tonnes après, hein?
Tu me connais pas.
Peter, the metaphor levels are kind of at danger levels here, aren't they?
Yes. I know you're unconvinced by this film, Zan. I think we've both seen it twice now since it came out in Cannes a couple of years ago. And I've read a number of disobliging pieces about it. I have to say, I think it's very good. I like it. It has an edge of delirium and madness and melodrama and the obviousness, the radiation sickness of love. I kind of buy that as an obviously emphatic and slightly surreal statement. Mm. I think Tahar Rahim is really good in that. I think in some ways it's his best performance. It's a very open...
Better than Improfet. Generous.
I think it's more generous and open. You can see what he's feeling. You see, in Prophet and all those other films, he looks kind of closed and opaque, to be honest with you. But here, he's giving much more of himself as somebody who is, I think, very plausibly falling in love, not merely becoming erotically obsessed in a sort of noir-y way, but falling in love. And he plays, interestingly, against the opaque performance, which is Léa Seydoux, who is glassy-eyed and walled off. Mm. And I thought that was terrifically good. Mm. I love that Kubrickian thing of inside the cathedral of madness, those strange vertiginous perspectives. I thought it was absolutely great. I think it's a really good film. And the score, the kind of weird, clangy, electronic score, which sounds as if it's coming from the machinery, interestingly, and sometimes kind of is, again, I think that's really good. I was impressed by this film.
And I quite liked the sort of social realist aspect of it as well, where that awful thing where the Catch-22 thing, where the actual employees are in charge of keeping their radiation levels down, otherwise they get laid off.
Yes, exactly.
Which makes it sort of blaming the victim.
Yes, exactly. And it has a satirical dimension because, of course, France is famously or notoriously utterly dependent on nuclear power for its electricity. It has, whatever it is, 19 nuclear generators, which it built all at once, I think, about 30 or 40 years ago, because it has no coal deposits or whatever. And so it's a really interesting comment on France. And, of course, there are these kind of Silkwood shower scenes where things go terribly wrong. But it's not really simply just the horror of it. It's something weird and more diffuse is happening in this film. It's a very strange film. It's very distinctive. And I have to say, I really like it.
I'm coming around to it, hearing you talk about it. I just still found it a little overwrought and a bit overthought as well.
I, Well, I don't think that. I mean, I think lots of films are overwrought and overthought and to nothing and to no good purpose. Mm. They're overwrought and they're overthought and they're telling you something you know already. Whereas Grand Central, I think, is telling you something I kind of don't think I did know very much. And that also that kind of loyalty to the building, I thought was interesting. That they venerated it. It was like a kind of cathedral in a small town, and they kind of gather around it and they think it's beautiful. And it does not despoil the local countryside. Mm. I think that was interestingly subversive. That this
it's not a very belching smoke.
No, it's not belching smoke, and it's all in this rather sylvan rural paradise of which the power station is a kind of interesting new dimension. So I, for lots of reasons, I can hardly put my finger on one. I really found this very kind of mesmeric.
Ici, on compte tous l'un sur l'autre. Si tu commences à jouer perso, ça va pas le faire, mon gars. Tu comprends là ce que je te dis?
C'est moche ce qui arrive à ton équipe.
De quoi tu parles? Tu m'as demandé de trouver des gamins, et moi je vais faire avec ce qu'il y avait.
Ça fait beaucoup.
C'est simple, là. Pour nous, t'es en sursis. Si on relève encore trop de tout sur ton dosimètre, on t'arrête pour la saison.
Leaking passions in Grand Central. Next up, we have Mike Myers' documentary tribute to an unsung hero of rock and roll excess. We know him as Shep Gordon, but to his friends, he's Supermensch.
I drove into Los Angeles, and there was a Hollywood Landmark hotel. The girl called me over and said she was Janis Joplin. She introduced me to Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix said, are you Jewish? And I said, yeah. And he said, you should be a manager. I said, great, no problem. Who should I manage? Alice Cooper.
Mike Myers leads us behind the velvet rope to meet garrulous, generous Shep Gordon, who managed Alice Cooper and Groucho Marx, and now throws the best damn dinner parties at his beachfront pleasure dome in Hawaii. Our invite, presumably, got lost in the post.
Let's invent something new that nobody's ever seen before, and let's stick with it.
We tried to do as many outrageous things as we could. I was so over my head.
Catherine, how come you've never been managed by Shep Gordon?
One day. You call him an unsung hero in your intros, and I mean, if I ever hear another word about this guy and what a supermensch he is, because this isn't just singing praises, this is crazy, this is insane hagiography. It's way over the top. You've got no sense of whether this is an accurate presentation of this great guy.
It's like a film that's been put together for his own private party.
It is. Mm. It is very much like that. It's like the world's best birthday present or something. It's very strange and very annoying. And I found interesting and entertaining in its way. Mm. But you just can't get beyond that once you're thinking, oh my God, there's no light and shade here at all. And also, it's got that weird documentary thing of you've got Shep saying a funny thing that he's done, that he gave some guys some grass, and then you have to see an image. You can't just see him say it. You have to see a draw of grass that's not the draw of grass, but is that. It's like you're sort of three, or you've never seen a picture before or something. It's very irritating. You're dealing with, in effect, quite a kind of adult theme. Mm. But you're treating them like you're in kindergarten. I found that very annoying.
But maybe that says a lot about Hollywood celebrity.
One, that you have to be
shown. So they're pictures. Little kids,
yeah, I guess
doing
so.
Adult pursuit.
Well, it didn't massively reflect well on people. I mean, the grass thing was that he, who was it? Was it Alice Cooper or somebody? Mm. He said,
Jimi Hendrix.
Somebody,
They all blur.
Foggy days, yeah. But, he said, oh, I'll be your manager. Here's some grass. And they said, yeah. And it's like, oh, but. Is that great? I mean, it just seems a bit...
Well, there's lots of dodgy stuff in there as well. There's a bit where he goes on about, we tried to keep the underage girls out of the way. And you think, the present climate, you say, wait.
Yeah. It's a great picture of that.
It really is. That's a jarring moment. I found it... It was hugely indulgent to somebody about whom we knew nothing in the first place. That's the disconcerting thing. I found it quite watchable. It was quite interesting as a guide to what it was like. But they are very, very evasive on the subject of drugs. For example, if Mr. Shep Gordon is selling drugs, he must have had to buy these drugs from somebody else. And I wanted to know, I don't want to harsh your mellow, everyone, but please... Tell me a little bit more about the drug trade then, because that's an interesting subject, isn't it? In the LA music scene in the 70s and 80s. I don't want a kind of Kenneth Anger style description necessarily, but I do want to hear something more about the reality of what's going on.
It's clearly a big
here.
Venn diagram of artist management and criminality.
And of course it is. Of course it is. Having said that, I did find it quite watchable in terms of just tootling along, but there's lots of question marks there. There are.
Did you like him? I found that I kept kind of swinging. Like at one point, I thought he's a bit like Larry David. I'm kind of liking him.
He looks like Larry David.
He looks like Larry David. He speaks like Larry David. Mm. And yet he doesn't quite have the acerbic. And then he starts going, oh, awful name dropping and talking about his celebrity chefs. And
that's so boring. Celebrity chefs, so boring.
And I think if you're being called a supermensch, you've really got to be pretty special. You know, that level is pretty high. You know, menches are good. Supermensch has got to be great. And also, in order to really warm to him and for him to be a mensch, he's got to be a bit of a failure. And you could argue that in some ways he is, but kind of not. Where the evidence here? And so it's like with Larry David, you don't empathise with him. I mean, you know, he's not like Larry David because Larry David is always screwing up, and this guy really isn't. And you know, he's surrounded. It's like the anti-Larry David, really.
He tells the best stories.
I have told Shep things that I haven't told anybody else, not even my wife.
It's a bird, it's a plane, it's Supermensch. And after all that, there's nowhere to go except straight to the dogs. We finish, as promised, with Pudsey the movie.
Hello, my dears. This must be Pudsey.
Thanks for doing this, Mrs. Willoughby.
Oh, there's always room for another one.
You will look after him, won't you?
He's kind of special.
Special is my middle name.
This is Pudsey, the little pooch with big ambitions. First, he learnt to walk on his hind legs. Then, he won Britain's Got Talent. And now, he's starring in his very own motion picture. Academy voters, take note. Vote, vote, vote for Pudsey the dog.
Let me introduce you to the others.
You gotta be joking.
Everyone, this is Pudsey Poos. Pudsey Poos.
Enough of the Pudsey Poos.
This is Flossie.
Hello.
And Fuzzy Cheeks.
All right.
And Princess Peach Pringle.
Kill me now.
Catherine, big fan of Pudsey, obviously, but is he the same when now he's in a limo and in his own film?
I don't know. You see, I didn't really watch Britain's Got Talent, so I was surprised when watching this film to realise that standing on his hind legs for a few seconds, apparently that's it. Apparently that's the whole thing. Yeah. That's his whole routine.
We've been doing that for about 10 years.
Well, speak for yourself. Yes. But the weird thing is with this, that gimmick on the big screen, it's difficult in a kid's film because you've got the genitals, so you have to trim him just above that, which brings you into an interesting thing about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. No genitals. No genitals at all. But yeah, anyway, so you've got Pudsey. I mean, I find him quite an unprepossessing dog. He's got these horrible teeth and it's very grubby.
He hasn't looked straightened yet.
No, he hasn't had no work done. Not very interesting. All the personality that David Williams brings tends to be just greed. Yes. And this is one of the cheapest films.
Yes.
Cheapest looking films I've ever seen in my life. The opening montage, which is him going around London, I don't know what this is. This is not in it.
No.
Is him, and in many of the shots, he's just not in the shots. There's loads of shots of some pangas. He's not even there.
No.
And there's one montage where he has a fight with John Sessions, and they're sort of, you see them beginning to fight, and then the camera zooms out, and you just see the exterior of the house with like movements in the windows. It's like you can't even fund a fight between a dog and John Sessions. How expensive would that be?
It's appalling. It's appalling. It's one of the rare times I've just thought, this is a money back situation. This is a product recall situation. It really is that bad. It's shoddy and mediocre. And I felt an overwhelming sense of shame, really. I was ashamed.
Well, just being there.
Just being there. I felt ashamed on behalf of everybody involved with this incredibly mediocre piece of work. I mean, it really is that. It's insulting. It really is insulting that you are expected to pay money to watch this absolutely appalling film. I mean, it really is. I mean, there are appalling films and appalling films. I mean, you know, I thought Grace of Monaco was appalling before I saw this, and now that looks like Citizen Kane, really. I mean, at least it paid its audience the compliment of technically trying to go through the motions and make some sort of decent film.
Yeah.
Whereas this is so awful. I mean, as I understand it, I've watched a little bit from YouTube of the original TV show, and the original show was that Pudsey was kind of daft. It was kind of goofy and daft, but the point is it was a musical act and he was dancing to music.
Right.
Here, the music is gone. That aspect
of
it.
They couldn't afford the music.
Yes, perhaps there's a copyright issue. It might well be that. But either way, that the dancing aspect of it has gone completely. Mm. And now what he does is just stand up on his hind legs a little bit and then drop down. And then you have, I'm sorry to say, David Williams, who I Like David Wayne, like David Adnida. Yeah. And there are lots of good people in this. That's the tragedy. It's Jessica Hines, it's Sarah Finovitz, isn't it? And
Olivia
John Sessions.
Coleman.
Olivia Colman's not, in fact, in it.
No. Isn't she the voice of the posh horse?
Oh, is she?
You're trying to spare her, Peter.
I'm trying to spare her.
Olivia Colman stars in
Okay,
Pudsey.
She does.
I think she,
okay,
because I was looking out for her.
Is she? Oh, yeah. Right.
Sorry,
okay.
Sorry,
well,
Peter.
Right. Okay, fair enough. Well, there's somebody else who's really good in it. I think all these talented people have had their talent absolutely nullified by this film. It's just, it's one to forget for everybody. I wish I could have a sort of Google right to forget this film. I think it should have the right to be forgotten.
I would defend it slightly. I didn't think it was that terrible. I went to the actual premiere, which was a privilege, you know.
And Pudsey was there.
Pudsey was there. Well. I didn't get that close. I'm a dog person, but I didn't.
Apparently
really.
He's horrible.
Yeah, he's a swine.
The kids were kind of interested. They were quite, the young ones particularly were quite, there's a joke. I mean, it's very sort of game film, you know. I mean, it's partly the cheap thing. It's partly just that it's quite game. So there's this, the end scene is at a village fete, and they obviously didn't have the money or didn't care that it was sort of drizzling.
Yeah.
So it's this bucolic rural scene that's horrible looking. Yeah. But there's a joke in which a big fat pig thinks he's a chicken.
Mm.
And so you've got sort of identity crisis things. And then there's one of the most revolting jokes I've ever known in my life about how he thinks he's incubating an egg, but really it's just shit. And so he's forever trying to incubate poo, which is really...
That's just a great comment on
What
the
a
film.
Comment it is on developing that movie.
Oh, I say hello. Who are you?
I'm Pudsey. Some call me Pudsey the Megadog.
Well, I'm Nellie, and this is Edward.
The, mega horse.
Be quiet, Edward.
Yes, dear.
Cluck, cluck, everyone! Cluck, 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 cluck.
Is that pig making chicken noises?
Ken has an identity crisis.
We call him the full English breakfast.
Oh, very funny. When are you going to respect my lifestyle choices?
Oh, Ken, you are not a chicken.
Well, if I'm not a chicken, how come I'm always laying eggs?
Those aren't eggs.
Oh, yes, ooh, they are.
Finally lost my appetite. See ya!
What's his problem?
That's Pudsey, the movie Laying an Egg, on a screen right near you. And on that malodorous note, we take our leave. My thanks to Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shord. My thanks to the monkeys, the mensch, and the walking, talking dog. We're back next week.